We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. Your hosts are Michael McNamara and me, Ryan Schwan. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the podcast. The Pelicans just completed a 3-1 record since our last podcast, and I want to make a special invitation to all of the basketball gods to go and take a red hot poker up the rear because they are driving me crazy.
Oh, it's all going to be worth it in the end when we feel like we get gypped again by the gods, miss the playoffs by a game, and then the Pelicans get the number one overall pick. They're going to make it up to us, I promise. or we sneak into the playoffs. Steph Curry twists an ankle again, and we make an improbable run from the 8th seed. I mean, at some point, they've got to make it up to us.
I mean, it might be just the fact that we have Anthony Davis. They're like, here, have Anthony Davis. Oh, and screw you.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it. It's better than, what, we could have got Thomas Robinson that year in the draft if we would have stayed in our same lotto position. So maybe this is the penance we have to pay.
Yeah. So, I enjoyed the game thoroughly. Tyreke Evans went down. We'll talk all about that in a little bit. But these four games have been a bit of a roller coaster for me. I mean, Anthony Davis came back at the start of it. We weren't really expecting him to make it back that quickly. I predicted 1-3. So obviously I really suck at this. But you know, Davis came back. He hasn't scored less than, what, 23 in any game, these four games?
Don't look. What do you think his averages are since returning? Points, rebounds, and blocks. Go.
Points, rebounds, blocks. I would say 31, 10. I don't know how many rebounds he's getting. So maybe 10 or 11, and I would say 3.5.
33, 12, and 4.5.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, the numbers you rattled off sounded insane, and they were all low.
He's sick. I'm just going to flat out say it. I have never watched anybody who's played for my basketball team who is as good as Anthony Davis is right now. Like, and I watched, like, Chris Paul, amazing a couple of those years. Absolutely sick, amazing. I would take this Anthony Davis over any version of Chris Paul that I watched.
I agree, but he's turning 22 on Wednesday. I mean, have we already seen his prime? Because
should we trade him now? Have we already seen the best of him? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, he's turning 22. He's a college senior. This might be it. It's crazy. I mean, Tim Duncan's just entering the league now at this point. You know, David Robinson's still 3 years away from entering, and yet the stuff Anthony Davis is doing now, I mean, as many 2010 five-block games as anybody under the age of 22, him and Shaq, hold that record. Davis could theoretically break it tomorrow against Brooklyn. Just everything that he's doing is absolutely phenomenal. But I want to ask you, I mean, getting into these games, there was a feeling amongst Pelicans fans that reincorporating Davis into the offense, though he definitely was getting his and was looking amazing, it seemed to, and we said this would happen, have an effect on the other guys, have an effect on some of the ball movement. How did you feel outside of Davis the other Pelicans looked as they tried to reincorporate him this week?
By the end of it, I think they actually had figured it out. Like I felt pretty comfortable with what I saw against Memphis and Milwaukee. Detroit and Boston, maybe they were relying on him a little more than they should be. It seemed like they were running a lot of post-up plays for him, and they were just trying to get the ball to Davis as much as they possibly can, which, you know, Davis is amazing, and you get the ball to him, and he's going to score half the time, which is probably about what you'd want from most teams. Like, 1 point per possession is actually not so bad. But, you know, the rest of the team really looked like they were trying to figure it out, especially Eric Gordon. Like, his everything that they were doing before to find Eric Gordon on open shots and open flares, Detroit did a really good job in one respect of staying on him, but he had been a really major weapon, and he kind of just vanished those first couple games, but you can see they're finding their ways to get to him. And I will say this, like, Anthony Davis, he's looking a lot more for, you know, players on the perimeter now. I mean, everybody's moving the ball. And I will say, watching the first half of this Milwaukee game, it was some of the most beautiful offensive basketball I've seen. Like, yeah, we had some bad turnovers here and there, but just in general, Milwaukee was overplaying everything and, you know, trying to hedge the pick and rolls hard, and they just moved the ball around it until they got to the open guy, quick passes, and, you know, open shot. And if it didn't work out, then Davis usually made something happen.
Yeah, I'd say the one exception is I think Eric Gordon underestimated Milwaukee's length on some plays. You know, made some really poor passes and decision trying to pass through the lane on their length. You know, I know we're going to talk a lot about the Pelicans, but they gave up 114 points tonight, but Milwaukee's normally a really good defense, and if Jabari Parker's 80% of what he was hyped, you know, the hype was, and they get a rim protector. That team, I mean, you start to think about the contenders out east, even if LeBron stays, you know, 80% of what he is for the next 4 or 5 years, I really think that could be a contending team. And, you know, that's great to me. The more great teams you have in small markets, the better it is for the league. But whatever, we'll talk more Pels. But I was super impressed with that team, and I wish we could have stole Chris Middleton when he was available, because now I don't think there's any chance Milwaukee ever lets him go.
No, he's a really solid wing player. And Giannis, like last year I watched Giannis, and he did not really impress me. I mean, you saw a couple things here and there. On our sister podcast On the Fly, they had a guest on from Milwaukee. And he was mentioning how pretty much all Giannis could do last year was be in transition and be impressive in transition, and that was it. That guy, you take any, like, era of basketball, and there's always great players and their foils, and, like, you look at, like, Tim Duncan, and he always had Chris Webber and Kevin Garnett, and it's never really super clear who's the best one of the three, and after the air is over, you're kind of like, duh. You know, it was obviously Tim Duncan, but Giannis is who's probably going to shape up to be Anthony Davis's foil as a forward in the league who could actually be possibly, you know, at least in the conversation, as good as him.
Yeah, I liked, I don't know, this is always a thing that I'm hesitant to applaud players for, but I loved how much he seemingly cared and, you know, mm-hmm. was into the game and, you know, was talking to his teammates. I'm impressed. I think that draft, at least the top of the draft, people will look through, and I really think it's possible that maybe Oladipo is the only quasi all-star level player that ever comes out of that draft, but people are going to look, you know, at the middle of it with Antetokounmpo and Rudy Gobert. I think that those three are going to be the clear best players to come out of that, you know, fairly weak draft.
Yep, and they'll save it from being like the 2000, which was an absolute disaster.
They don't have Mike Miller.
Yeah, Mike Miller. I mean, Mike Miller and then what was his name? Kenyon Martin were the only reasonable basketball players from the entire draft, I felt like.
Mike Miller's fiance once tried to sell me a car. That's my Mike Miller story.
That's great.
That's all I got.
So anyways, before we like talk any more about this Milwaukee game, because the Milwaukee game was great, let's just skip back in time a little bit to the day after I was predicting, or 2 days after I was predicting that this team was going to go 1-3, and you know, Davis, we were thinking, oh, maybe he'll come back for Memphis, and you heard when you heard that Davis was going to be back for that Detroit game, did you suddenly think that this team was going to rip off four straight? Or were you still worried about Davis, like, knocking off Russ, but how he would fit in? And then what did you think of that game?
Yeah, I mean, I had a good feeling about the Detroit game only because of how well Ashiq played against Drummond in the game before, and they're trying to reincorporate some stuff, too, with Reggie Jackson and Tayshaun Prince getting big minutes. So I actually felt pretty good about that game going in, but I thought Davis would be rusty. I thought that, you know, he would be a little bit more of a decoy. He wouldn't be that aggressive on the defensive end. And of course, he comes in and takes 30 shots, gets 8 blocks. I mean, people are talking about Dell needs to sell Greg Monroe this summer, or Monty needs to talk to him. If there's any reason for Greg Monroe to come to New Orleans, it's so he never has to play against Anthony Davis in an NBA game again. I mean, Anthony Davis, Greg Monroe put up 13 and 15 in this game, did fine, but Anthony Davis straight up embarrassed him on several possessions.
Yeah, it was straight shutdown territory. I mean, Monroe, I think he only maybe scored one basket directly against Davis, and everything else was when Davis wasn't just directly facing him up. And the thing that was the most telling is, you know, Davis, the reason why we have Omer Ashiq on our team is because Davis flat out did not like playing with centers when he was in his first and second year. He was not big enough. It's too bruising. It's too much of a load. So they brought in a guy so that Davis can play power forward. But you watch this game and Drummond and Monroe are big boys. I mean, they're power. And Davis was accepting hits from them and then still have legs and balance to be able to jump up and block shots and affect things and get rebounds. And it used to be when we watched him in those first 2 years, if somebody barreled into him, he didn't have the weight or the power to be able to lift off his feet anymore. I mean, he is completely transformed. He's just so much more powerful than he used to be. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think with all of that, though, came some of the things we were worried about. I mean, Eric Gordon was a guy who was just letting the ball go anytime that he touched it, seemed to have ultimate confidence. And then he comes out in this game, only takes 5 shots, goes 1 of 5, You know, we didn't see any of the playmaking. Like I said, since Drew had gone down, Gordon was averaging around 4 or 5 assists a game. He wasn't even doing that here, wasn't much of a decoy, wasn't hoisting up shots. I mean, he was basically, you know, a fringe role player at best in this game. You know, we saw a lot of guys struggle, some with the shots, but more than just the shots, just the movement of the offense, and it seemed like the confidence guys had. When AD was on the court, they were playing second fiddle, just looking to get him the ball and watching him for him to do something. And, you know, that's not ideally how this team is going to thrive. So I think a couple of guys took a little bit of a step back with AD playing. The other thing I want to talk to you about, and this is a theme we saw throughout the week, in this game against Detroit, you look at Ashik and Ajinsa. Ashik played 9 more seconds than Alexis Ajinsa. Ashik is a guy we gave up a first-rounder for. We're effectively paying $15 million for this season. Ajinsa is a minimum salary player. I mean, should we start to read anything into this? Because it's a pretty consistent theme that we've seen the last couple of games, that these guys, I mean, it's not what you would expect from, you know, when you look at their salary difference as far as the minutes. What are you reading into Ajinsa's minutes practically catching up to Ashik's?
What I'm reading is that Monty Williams has a great confidence in Ajinsa at this point. And he didn't before at all. You could tell that he didn't have confidence in him. And the fact that Ajinsa can play a little bit without fouling and is a more complete offensive player than Ashik is earning him more and more time. I don't think it necessarily means that Ajinsa is going to be, like, you know, the guaranteed starter next year. We should say goodbye to Ashik or anything like that. But the best part about the fact that Ajinsa is actually playing well and can be trusted in big situations is I cannot remember the last time when the Hornets/Pelicans could really play offense defense with their center in a realistic, like, impactful manner. And I mean, Ashik is brilliant defensively. He's made some great plays at the ends of games to help us win, and Ajinsa's got big moments on the offensive end. This is like a really good situation to be in, especially at the very end of games when, you know, everybody hates how slow the game is at the very end of the game with all the timeouts and everything, but this lets you just swap these two guys back and forth like crazy. And that's a really good thing for the Pelicans to be able to actually have that ability. So, I don't know. I wouldn't sit here and say, oh, now Ajinsa's taking the starting role next year and Ashik should prepare to walk. I wouldn't go that far, but at least Monty seems to really like Ajinsa.
Yeah, and I mean, we've got to remember that the team's missing some offensive, well, a lot of offensive firepower, you know, especially in that front court with Ryan Anderson gone, so...
But Ajinsa's, I mean, he's not bad off it. Like, when he takes a shot, do you cringe?
No, I'm saying that's why he's playing as much as Ashik, because the team is missing so much offensive firepower that, you know, they need it in order to maintain. So I don't know. I find it interesting. These are two guys who are going into free agency. Two of them that are, you know, unrestricted free agents that, you know, the Pelicans obviously have the means to sign. And just, I think it's, you know, a very interesting situation. I love the way Ajinsa's playing, but I can't lie and say that I'm not worried that he's putting himself out of our price range. I mean, this is the way I felt about Anthony Morrow at the end of last year, is I was so happy he was playing well, and I loved watching him play, but then part of me also, you know, felt like if we buried him on the bench, you know, maybe nobody else would notice that he was good and we could steal him in the summer. So it's just, you know, it's this odd thing where I think 3 months ago, if you poll the general managers around the league, you know, they would have told you that, he was a minimum player, maybe a biannual guy. He keeps playing like this. I mean, it only takes one GM. I'm really starting to get curious about, you know, what he might command. The only thing that makes me feel kind of good about it is we might be going into the best, you know, the best free agent center class of all time. So maybe he won't be as noticed, kind of hiding in there. So, or he could be a guy that if a team loses somebody, you know, he's a guy that they go after, to, you know, as a cheaper replacement. But anyway, I just think it's interesting. I think they need both of them for this playoff stretch. I just wonder if, you know, how this all plays out come next July.
All right. Well, just to make you feel a little better, I will point out that the last three games, he is only averaging 5.5 points and 4 rebounds a game. So his numbers haven't been that great since Davis came back. So maybe he will remain under the radar.
Yeah, we shall see. Although we know that Toronto's going to they'll just straight up cut Valanciunas.
That's right.
And throw a big deal at Ajinsa. But, yeah, I think that was a huge thing I noticed in that Detroit game. What else stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean, mostly it was just our complete lack of shooting from the perimeter, and it wasn't even getting shots. Now, I did write the recap from this, and it felt to me like, you know, hey, they're running it through Anthony Davis way too much, and I'll still stand by that a little bit, but I will also point out that if you go back and watch, this is a Stan Van Gundy defensive team, and his players were really disciplined at staying within reach of both Poindexter and Gordon. They did not leave them very much at all. So there were still going to be situations they could have made more of an effort to feed those guys, but it wasn't like complete and utter like, oh, we're completely ignoring you. They were trying to make some stuff happen. It's just that those shots weren't open. So Davis had to take over at least a little bit. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing I noticed from our guards in this game is that they simply could not get past anybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, do we – Evans, I guess, at times, but, like, I don't really feel like we have any isolation player. Like, there's plenty of times in a game, practically against every team, that when they isolate a perimeter player on us, I just assume the guy's going to – blow right by our defender and we're going to need to help. But I don't feel like there's any, you know, cat quick guys like that on this Pelicans team. Or, you know, even if there is somebody like Gordon, you know that he's not going to pull up and he seems reluctant to go straight to the hole. So I mean, that was something that stood out to me in this game. That and Eric Gordon was just, it was a nightmare for him to try to trail Jody Meeks on those picks. It was just, I mean, I felt really bad watching him run around and just take poor angles and, you know, have Jody Meeks curl around those screens on him all night. Eventually, Poindexter, you know, picked him up and helped Gordon out. But there was a stretch of like 4 or 5 straight possessions where I felt bad for Eric Gordon trying to stay with Jody Meeks.
Yeah, there's actually a moment where first they tried Gordon in the beginning and he was pretty awful. They even tried Evans for a little bit and he was pretty awful, which you're kind of like, really, Evans? and then they actually put Cole on him first, and Cole was having some success. And this is where I thought it was kind of weird. Like, so Stan, once Cole had like kept Meeks out of the play a couple possessions, he inserted Jackson. And Cole went and guarded Jackson. Does Jackson scare you even a little bit? Like, is this a guy? People talk about how he's going to get too big of a contract. Can you imagine somebody putting down a Brandon Jennings style contract for this guy? Like $9 million a year for 3 years? Like, is he that good?
Oh, I think he'll get way more than that.
Really? The guy?
I didn't say he'll deserve more. I say he's going to get more.
I just don't see it. I don't see this guy as, I see as him as a kind of a mediocre combo guard.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely making his reputation off of that Memphis series, you know, but he is quick. But, you know, in this game, again, he can't hit the three and he doesn't get to the line. And like, you know, so how are you going to be efficient? I mean, somehow he racked off 11 assists. I think we need to get to a point where, you know, I know there's different sites that track it, but I think we really need to get to the point where we start defining certain assists, because in no way in this game did I feel like he was a playmaker. We feel that way whenever Tyreek gets a bunch of assists. I have no clue where they come from. There was even a game this week where I think Pondexter had 7 assists, and I never felt like he, you know, facilitated. But anyway, so yeah, I mean, he picked up assists in this game, got a double-double, but no, he doesn't scare me. Like, in this game, I was scared at times when they went to Monroe in the post. I was scared at times when we had the wrong guy trying to trail Jody Meeks, but at no point was I worried about Reggie Jackson saying, oh no, you know, that's going to be the guy that beats us if it stays close.
Yeah. Yeah, and the only other thing I can say about this game is I can't remember the last time I watched my team have a guy with 11 rebounds, a guy with 11 rebounds, and another guy with 13 rebounds, and none of those three guys were the best rebounders in the game. Like, they were bottom, like, 2 guys better than them. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, Monroe had 15 and Drummond had 18. Ugh. All right, let's move on to another game. So, after that, we had our one letdown game. When were you really upset with this loss?
Not as much as, I mean, I predicted on the podcast that this would be a loss. I think I had like 5 minutes of worrying about this game.
Mm-hmm.
Just because.
I'm just so tired of bad record teams.
But they're not. Okay, I don't.
Bad record team.
I don't want to go off on a rant because but it bothers me so much. I mean, there's so many things about this narrative that bothers me. But first of all, Boston is not a bad team. Like, going into this game, the point differential between these two teams was less than 2. Less than a shot per game. You know, and on top of that, Boston had won 5 of 7. They, you know, completely dismantled Golden State in a half. I mean, they're not that much worse of a team than us. And you could even argue that since the All-Star break, I mean, they've been as good as us and we've been playing well. So I'm bothered that people compared this game to like Philly and New York. This was nothing like it. This Boston team is a good team. They're not that much different than us overall, and they had a player that could do something that none of ours could do in Isaiah Thomas. He could just absolutely take over a stretch on his own by creating his own shot, and that was the difference in the game. And we've seen this so many times. We've looked at the big games, you know, whether it was Kemba Walker. It was, who are some of the other kind of scat back guards who have had huge games against us? I know there was a couple. I remember the Kemba Walker game. There's at least one or two more. Not Westbrook, but another like in between guard who absolutely killed us.
I try to block them out.
Okay, but I mean it's obviously something we have problems with, and you know I had a reader tweet me an interesting theory, and I want to see what you think about this. You know, we're talking about all the inconsistencies and people can't figure out this team and it's so hard, whatever. We beat Memphis one night and we lose to Boston the other night. He said that basically it's pretty easy, at least on one end. He says you find any team whose offensive focus is their front court, and the Pelicans will have a winning record and beat those teams. Just on the surface, and he cited, obviously, Memphis, cited San Antonio, you know, cited Detroit. And I don't know, I just was wondering what you, I mean, obviously it's not a full-fledged theory, but what do you think about that just on the surface?
Well, like you just said earlier, there always seems to be a guard who's going to be able to tear us apart. It always feels like there's somebody who can get that first step past us no matter what on the wing. So that makes perfect sense. If you got a guy who's got some talent on the wing and they're able to have two of them out there when we have Drew Holiday or just one out there now, those guys are going to be able to get in and cause havoc and cause us some problems. And, you know, our interior defense isn't bad against big men. Like, I can't, now that you say that, I have not thought of, I can't think of a single big man who just flat out destroyed us or even caused us too much trouble. Like, I guess in the Chicago game, Pau Gasol did okay, but I can't think of any other big men who's really done much to us. But I can think of a lot of, like, not just guards, like guards or small forwards who just keep driving to the basket and scoring on us, like we saw Giannis do to us tonight. The guy just kept getting into the middle, right into the middle of the paint, and being able to hit shots.
Yeah, I mean, and then again, a lot of this is without Drew Holiday, the one guy this entire season who seems like he's been able to slow Russell Westbrook down. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting. I mean, I even think about when we play Portland, what do we want? We want Aldridge taking all the shots and Lillard just kind of staying away. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that we welcome. So I don't know, just an interesting thing to watch out for. But yeah, perimeter guys can absolutely kill us. You know, Isaiah Thomas, you knew a run was coming at some point, but, you know, that's what happens again, the Pelicans letting them stay around, and then Isaiah Thomas just goes absolutely berserk for a small stretch, and that winds up being the difference in the game. So, it's frustrating, but I don't want to hear these things anymore about how we lose to all these bad teams and we beat the good teams. And I mean, first of all, there's just any young team that has no continuity on its roster is going to be inconsistent. And the second thing I want to say is that, you know, this team was, in my opinion, always destined to lose 30 to 40 games. To me, if this season plays out 100 times, there is no scenario in which they don't lose 30 to 40 games. To me, if I had to pick my poison, I would rather struggle somewhat against the 500 or below teams and be good against the upper level teams, because that gives me more encouragement moving forward that, yeah, maybe a little bit of focus or fire needs to be added against the teams that you have to beat here and there. But the harder thing to do in this league is to consistently beat the very good teams, and those are the teams that you're playing in the playoffs. So, you know, if you were to tell me at the beginning of the year, hey, this team is going to lose 34, 35, 36 games, you know, I would have thrown a couple losses against bad teams on there because, you know, it just makes me more optimistic that they could beat the good ones. Of course I want both. I'm not stupid. I'm not saying that I'm glad they're losing the good teams. I'm just saying, would people really be more optimistic if it was the opposite and we were slaying all the bad teams but couldn't beat the good ones? I know I certainly wouldn't be.
Yeah. I also point out that I guess about 2 weeks ago, I don't even remember what game made me want to do it, but I did start just going through the schedule and putting tick marks into losses against, you know, bad teams and wins against good teams to see, oh, we always seem to win against really good teams and lose against really bad teams. And when you actually put the numbers together, that's not even true. We actually beat bad teams more often than we lose to the bad teams. It's just that when you lose to Philadelphia, you remember losing to Philadelphia. Go ahead.
And you don't remember when you beat those teams because you take – I mean, people were crying about the Boston loss after we had just won six games against bad teams, saying we never beat bad teams. That was our last six wins, and I'm throwing Toronto in there only because they have been terrible. So their record isn't bad, but we just beat six bad teams – we lose to Boston and everybody, well, we never beat bad teams. I mean, literally just won six in a row.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, I mean, a lot of those bad, I mean, the New York and Philly losses were, first of all, I mean, like on back-to-backs, and they were, you know, down AD and Drew Holiday after those injuries had just happened. I mean, I'm not making excuses for it. It's just, it's a really like simple narrative that there's dozens of factors, much more complex than just we beat the good teams and we lose to the bad ones and let's make a snarky joke about it. It's not even close to that simple.
Yeah. So the only other thing I wanted to say about the Boston game, was the one thing I took away from this was, I think this is the first time I've seen a game where Tyreke Evans met his physical match and he didn't know really what to do. Like Marcus Smart, I think, has all the same physical power and almost this exact same size and a little bit more quickness than Evans. And I think Evans was just completely stymied. Like, he just had no idea what to do in this situation. I can't just, when I hit this guy, he's going to bounce off a little bit and give me that little extra room I'm used to. It was kind of jarring to see Evans and not really know how to counter that guy. And it's a lot of the reason why he ended up with seven turnovers in the game.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you can't even, like, get Marcus Smart off you by setting some picks. Like, he's just an animal going through them. I think he's a younger, faster, smarter Tyreke Evans. Well, I mean, like, at least on the defensive end, I felt that Tyreke needed to give up the ball every possession, especially without Avery Bradley there. I would have ran through the offense through Gordon or AD in the high post. I did not want Tyreke to have the ball at all when Marcus Smart was on him.
It was pretty sick. So let's move on from our one loss, unless you had something else you want to talk about that one.
Nope.
And let's move on to the ever fun Memphis games. It's so nice that the Grizzlies really hate to play us and keep getting their butt handed to them by our team. Like, just in general, it always feels like the Grizzlies are going to get their butts kicked by us. And that's such a nice feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, especially, I mean, we were down 18 in the first half. Let's say you have $50 that you have, you have lying around in your account. The wife doesn't know that's in there. You could do whatever you want with it. What odds would have I had to have given you to entice you to spend that $50 and bet on a Pelicans victory in halfway through that second quarter?
When they're down 18?
Yeah.
Would
you have taken 10-1?
I actually would have taken 10-1.
You would have just been willing to throw that $50 away.
Yeah, and the only reason why is because they couldn't turn the ball over more than they had in those first, quarter and a half.
But Memphis was missing a bunch of free throws. Like, even when it was 18, I felt it could be 25. Like, remember, Memphis was missing a bunch of free throws, and they weren't looking great either.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was an ugly, ugly game, but I felt like that was almost as bad as I'd seen this particular team play. Like, that first quarter and a half, they could not get anything going. They were dropping the ball. Like, it was even, like, this is Memphis. Like, if you look at any team in the league and I told you, all right, in the first quarter and a half, this team is going to run 17 fast break points down your throat and easily half of them are off of made baskets. Your team's just not getting back on them. The team, would you pick Memphis as the team that's doing that to you? It didn't make any sense. But we were watching like some of the worst transition defense I have ever seen by the Pelicans. They just did not run back on anything. It was terrible. So I was like, they got to be a little bit better in the second half. I still thought they'd lose, but they got to be better in the second half. And they were. They had two fast break points against them in the second half.
Yeah, and I mean, Memphis, I mean, Memphis really struggled in that third quarter. Their saving grace was they actually got to the line. I mean, just from the field, the Pelicans were 14 of 21 in the third quarter. Memphis was 4 of 13.
Yeah.
And New Orleans had made 4 threes. Memphis made none. So you're looking at, you know, just in that quarter, the Pelicans scored 32 points from the field. Memphis scored only 8. Now, Memphis, of course, got to the line, something that almost every game we could basically say that we did not do. But, I mean, the Pelicans really outplayed them in that third quarter, and then the fourth quarter was just – it was absolutely back and forth. Who would you say after that game give some credit out? You know, let's always take AD out of the equation because he's just a god amongst men. Give some credit out. Who do you give props to for helping seal that game in the fourth?
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, Evans. I'd have to go with Evans in that one because he was so bad the rest of the game. It was kind of like a revelation seeing him play good basketball again, and he was getting right into the teeth of everything. I would go with Evans. Who you giving the props to? I feel like you're setting me up to say, like,
no,
duh.
No, I mean, like, I think, I feel like Evans was fantastic, especially in that, the start to the third quarter.
Yeah.
But no, I think, I mean, to me, the biggest play of the game by far was with 2:30 left, Pelicans are up 4, and Eric Gordon has a wide open 3. He clanks it. Memphis gets the board, pushes. Mike Conley hits a contested 3. Memphis down 1, and now you're terrified. A couple seconds later, Eric Gordon comes off a screen, does not hesitate for a second, and takes another 3 and absolutely drills it.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, to me, when I was talking about, you know, Eric Gordon earlier, it's the confidence and that to me just showed, you know, such a different level than you had seen from him lately. And I think that 3 was the biggest play of the game. I thought Monty was great here playing offense defense with Ajinsa and Ashik down the stretch. Although,
yep.
Gotta be disappointed in Ajinsa losing a jump ball to Jeff Green. I mean, that's amazing, but. No, I love the way Tyreek came out in that third, but Eric Gordon, you know, hitting that 3, hitting the clutch free throws down the stretch. You know, I thought Norris Cole basically kept them afloat. You had Cole and Ajinsa. I mean, Memphis takes a 1-point lead with 7:20 left, and Cole and Ajinsa come back and score basically the Pelicans' next 9 points in that stretch before the Pelicans get the starters back in. So, you know, now the Pelicans are up 4 as the timeout is called and New Orleans gets all the starters back in. So I just thought it was such a team effort from so many guys that, you know, it was a win that I think a lot of different guys contributed to.
Yeah. I mean, and you didn't even mention, I mean, Ashik got the most minutes of his, like, probably the last month in this game. And so Marc Gasol, do you remember any big plays by Marc Gasol in this game other than the somehow leading the break up the middle of the floor for a fast break score?
No, I mean, a couple of blocks, but no, I mean, you're talking about the guy who's going to be first team all NBA, and Ashik did a tremendous job on him.
Just took him right out of any sort of offensive flow he had. I mean, the guy did get his 6 assists because he has the ball in his hands, but yeah, Sheik just did a phenomenal job on Gasol all game long. And then, I mean, can we ignore the fact that Anthony Davis basically made Zach Randolph look like a D-League player?
Yeah, and
Zach Randolph, 7 points, 2 rebounds, and many wails and moans.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the shots Randolph had was like a miracle rainbow jumper that AD almost blocked. I mean, yeah, you're looking at those two guys going 5 of 17. So the heart and soul of this Memphis team, the number 2 seed in the Western Conference, AD and Ashik just completely, you know, shut those guys down. If it wasn't for the man, the myth, the legend, Nick Calathes, this game would have been over, you know, long before.
Yeah, I gotta say, you talked him up for so long. Every game I'd watched up until this one, Nick Calathes looked awful, like awful.
And
in this game, he was pretty good.
9 points on 3 shots. 7 assists.
Not only 9 points, but like he was actually playing defense really well. He was pestering people and getting into them and making them pick up the ball and forcing time off the clock. He did a really good job. So I will give your boy Nick Calathes some props for this game because it was a pretty good game for him.
What was up with the Vince Carter cameo of 5 minutes? Like,
yeah. Well, he was hurt, so this was his second game back, I guess.
But how do you play a guy for? I don't know. That was a little weird, but I'm not complaining. But yeah, I mean, a great win, a win that, you know, this is what I'm saying. I mean, this is one of these games where we're like, yeah, we got a win and everything's good, but it was a terrible first half of basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, but they overcame it. What I loved about it is, when I say that I think Drew Holiday, when he returns healthy, let's say next year, should definitely be the starter on this team, it's not a knock on Tyreek. It's I look at the first couple minutes of the third quarter, and that is the Tyreek I want to see for 100 games every season moving forward. I want to see the guy who's just shot out of a cannon, you know, playing high-octane basketball, charging like a bull and looking for his own. And he can't do that for an entire season as the starting quote unquote point guard of this team. He's got to set up the offense and he walks it up and he's got to pace himself. I mean, if Drew Holiday comes back 100%, the injury issues are behind him, and imagine getting the Tyreek Evans that we saw coming out of that third quarter. Imagine that guy coming off the bench with 5 minutes left in the first and playing like his hair's on fire for the next 7 or 8 minutes, just absolutely abusing the other team's second unit. I think this team is good now. I think they're borderline very good. I think with Drew Holiday and Tyreek Evans playing the way we saw in this second half, where he's just attacking, 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 that could be an elite contending type of team.
Yeah. Although I want to say yeah, but I got to see them all play together and meld properly, because we have seen them play together and it can be kind of dicey at times. Like, somebody always seems to get left out. So I would love to see it, though. It would be nice if we didn't have all these injuries, wouldn't it? Just, ugh.
Yeah.
Hey, and you did mention earlier, like, you know, just those kind of combo guards who come flying in, hit a bunch of shots on us, they're pretty efficient, make us pay. Bino Udra, he did it to us in this game, too.
You know,
11 points on 6 shots. Just the guy knows how to get open shots in the mid-range.
Oh, he does it every... Bino Udra is to us what Tony Douglas is to me on NBA 2K. Like, in real life. But no, I say it on this podcast literally every time after we play Memphis that Bino Udra scares me more than Mike Conley. I mean, it's just, it's weird. But yeah, Udra, I mean, you look at all of their guards combined. If you put them together as one guard, you're looking at, what, 12 of 18 and them scoring 37 points for Conley, Calathes, and Udra? Like, it really is a problem. People want to talk about Tyreek's assist numbers and talk about all these offensive stats with our guards. This is where Drew Holiday is valuable. Look at what guards are doing to us time and time and time and time again, you know, on the other end of the court. That's great if you put up numbers in the box score, but if the other team's guards are just abusing us as well, it's a net neutral.
Well, let's move to the next game, because speaking of guards abusing us, Michael Carter-Williams. I will say, so the Tyreek Evans injury was doubly unfortunate for me, because I was so, like, caught up in dwelling on that stupid injury in the second half that I usually get, like, small thrills of satisfaction when a player on the other team who I have a decided opinion about, who is supposed to be bad at this and good at this, and like through the first half of the game they're doing everything that proves me completely wrong, regresses to the mean. So Michael Carter-Williams did that at the end of the fourth quarter, essentially turned the ball over, missed a couple wide open shots, did everything he was supposed to, you know, not, you know, he was basically being what he is. Because the rest of the game, that dude was sick. Like, if he played like that, like, all the time, he would be an all-star, and people would be crazy to trade him. Just hitting every mid-range jumper he took for the first three quarters, getting to the line at will, not turning the ball over a whole lot, just getting in the open court and feeding people. He looked really good up until, like, the last 3 or 4 minutes of the game.
Yeah, I mean, but exactly. At the end of the game, I still wanted him taking the shots. I thought, I don't know, they went away from it after it didn't work once. But the pick and roll with Antetokounmpo where Gordon would have to switch on him,
yeah.
If they would have done that for the entire, you know, the last 5 minutes of the game, you would have been terrified, right?
Absolutely.
But it didn't work once, and they were like, I guess we're going to go away from that. Like, are you kidding me? You know, Middleton didn't really touch the ball pretty much at all in the second half. So I wonder if in some ways the Carter-Williams hitting his shots was somewhat of a blessing in disguise, because, yeah, it gave him the green light at the end of the game, and that's where we obviously pulled away.
Yeah, and I'd also like to thank Jared Bayless for being Jared Bayless and helping us win that game, because when Cole came in, they countered with Bayless, and the Milwaukee announcers were saying how, you know, oh, I'll take Jared Bayless against Norris Cole any day. He's just going to tear him apart. And that wasn't true at all. But here's the best thing about that entire game. I got stuck watching the Milwaukee announcers, and their color guy might give Sean Elliott of the Spurs a run for his money for the most annoying person I've ever listened to.
Mm.
The best part of that game, however, was at the very beginning. He announced authoritatively, like, it wasn't like, I think this is what they should do. It was like, he is like, this is the gospel. And he says, all you have to do to stop the Pelicans is stop their guards. If you can make their guards not be able to penetrate, this team can't do anything, because Anthony Davis only gets points off of getting the ball around the rim on the pick and roll and getting offensive putbacks and scoring that way.
Wow.
And then Anthony Davis proceeded to make that guy look like the biggest jackass in the world. And I just cackled the whole time.
Did he at least acknowledge it later in the game?
In the third quarter, after Davis hit his third jumper in a row, and it was the one where he took two dribbles towards the baseline and then just drilled it.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, wow, Davis is really flouting the scouting report today. And I'm like, no, you just don't know basketball, dude. Because, wow. And 23 shots for 43 points.
Wow.
Like, I don't even. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Part of me understands, like, obviously they can't watch every game, but don't say something definitively unless you actually know and what. Like, you know, read off the scouting report or say you heard from somebody or whatever, but, man, it's no shame to not be an expert on all 30 teams in the NBA. It just bothers me when people, you know, do stuff like that. But yeah, I could imagine how hilarious it is, and I'm glad he made him eat his words. But I mean, so many things. I don't even know what to do with Anthony Davis anymore and talk about him. Like, what fresh take could we have? What could we say to our listeners right now that is, you know, even any bit insightful about him? He's absolutely amazing, and to me, the interesting part of this year Because I've been watching the NBA a long time. I mean, I'm not the oldest guy in the world, but seems like, you know, I'm at least as old or older than a large percentage of our listeners. I've been watching since 1990, you know, pretty closely, following everything in the league. I could honestly say I can never remember a top five of MVP candidates that all legitimately have an argument for MVP of the league. I think that the top five guys in other years, like you take the Steve Nash years, any of these five guys would have won those years. I really believe that all five of these guys could have a legit argument for MVP, and that's just, that's insane. What Anthony Davis is doing is, I mean, he's probably going to post the highest PER of all time and finish like fourth in MVP. It's just, you know, we've really been treated to an amazing year by the top players in this league. I mean, Chris Paul's probably number six, and he's having an absolutely an amazing year. And I really think it's a shame. I hope Dallas falls flat on its face, because it's a shame that, you know, Anthony Davis or Russell Westbrook, one of those guys will not be in the playoffs, because, you know, fans should get to see all of those guys, or, you know, both of those guys on a major stage.
So just so everybody's clear, who are your five guys?
Oh, Harden, Curry, LeBron, Davis, and Westbrook.
Okay.
And no, I mean, personally, my personal MVP ballot, I'd go Harden, Curry, Davis, Westbrook, LeBron. I mean, like, I'm putting LeBron fifth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally no slight to him. It's picking hairs. But I think these top five are amazing. And I seriously think every single one of them has an argument to make. I mean, who would be your fifth on that list?
Davis.
Yeah, and I mean, I could definitely see that. And I mean,
I think he might be the best player of the bunch.
I mean, I don't know. It's so hard. It's so hard to answer that, but you know, if you had one game to win against the Monstars tomorrow, you wouldn't pick Davis.
I probably would.
You would pick Davis over LeBron. If you have one game to win.
No, I would take.
With your life.
Yeah, no. So if my life depended on it, I would take LeBron.
Yeah.
I will say this, though. You know, beginning of this year, there was no question LeBron and Durant, 1-2, done. Anyone else who thought differently, morons.
Yeah.
Davis, since Durant's been injured so much this year, you take Davis over him next year?
Oh, yeah. And we got to give a shout out. NBA Rank actually had Davis as number two going into this year.
He did.
But, yeah, to me, it's without a doubt.
But NBA Rank did know that Durant was injured.
Oh, I know. I'm just, I mean, I think he'll clearly be number two, maybe number one on the list next year. But yeah, I mean, it's not really debatable, especially with this foot injury. I mean,
so let me actually put it this way. So you wanted a fresh take. This isn't a fresh take, but this is something that I do find really interesting. Chris Paul, the year he got close to winning the MVP, he lost out to Kobe. And a couple of years before that, think about those years.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how long it took for LeBron to be getting MVP consideration. There were still arguments: is LeBron better than Kobe Bryant? You just look back at like, any of those arguments. Have you heard anybody try to argue against Anthony Davis being a top three player? Like, do they? There is no person in the league that they go and they look at and they say, nah, he's not even good at it. He's not even the best guy at his own position. Like, Chris Paul was putting up historical seasons, and people were like, yeah, Deron Williams, he's better. Because Deron Williams, you know, he wins games against Chris Paul.
Yeah, and he's bigger. Like, Chris Paul never fit the prototype that everybody feels comfortable with.
Right.
So that was a big thing against it. No, I mean,
like even like LeBron James. You're like, LeBron James, he's really good, but Kobe's better. Remember Kobe in the Olympics? Kobe's better.
Yeah.
Like, there's always, when a player ascends to the top, there's always, like, there's another guy who no, that guy's still better. Or, no, that at their own position, or at least their own, like, area, like, that isn't the case for Davis. It is clear, 100%. Davis is the best power forward in the league, and if anybody's going to argue with you, they're morons, and everybody knows it.
Yeah, and I think another big part of it is that people, not only are they seeing the now, but everybody knows there's still growth where, you know, even the most optimistic about Chris Paul, like, the growth was going to come in between his ears. Mm-hmm. He wasn't going to get any better skill-wise, you know, and if so, it was marginally, where you could list things that Anthony Davis still could grow by 30-40%. I mean, his post-game, I would say, is a C- right now. There is no reason it can't eventually be an A. You know, his defense, same thing. Like, that's the thing that I think really has people freaked out about Davis, is that he's this amazing, the top of his position, a legit MVP candidate, and you could still see major growth, not only possible, but very likely in different aspects of his game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so good to be a Pelicans fan.
It is, if we could just turn the injuries off on this darn NBA 2K simulator.
All right, so we got some teams coming up. Do you want to talk about anything else before we jump on to the next slew of games?
I just want to give a small shout-out to, do you think we win that game if Dell Demps had not picked up Elliot Williams for a 10-day contract? Those same exact minutes go to Jimmer. 13 minutes, Elliot Williams goes 3-for-5, puts up 8 points on 5 shots. One of the few guys not to have any turnovers, had his one assist, became a 3-point shot. So basically, he utilized 6 possessions and accounted for 11 Pelicans points in 13 minutes, no turnovers. If Dell Demps does not make a 10-day signing out of nowhere, do the Pelicans win this game?
Well, the way Fredette's been shooting from 3-point, no.
Yeah, so, just a small little, Elliot Williams might be off this team in another, week or 2 weeks or whatever, but, when we talk about at the end of the year, all the little pickups Dell Demps made, I tend to agree. I don't know if they win this game without the little spark Elliot Williams gave them. So, another shout-out. Good job.
Yeah. And before we go on to the next games, because we only have, for the first time in a while, 2 games to talk about.
Sure.
So they got a nice long break. But tomorrow night against Brooklyn, I know most of you will probably be listening to this podcast on the Tuesday after in the morning when I release it. But there is a watch party at Tracy's. So if you want to have a good time and a good place to hang out with other Pelicans fans, there will be a couple special guests there. Tracy's watch party for Brooklyn Nets, and hopefully that should be a win. Though who knows? They're a bad team, and we always lose against bad teams.
Yeah, Brooklyn's been playing terrible of late. Although they beat Golden State this month,
it happens.
You want to talk to fan bases who must be pulling their hair out? They literally beat Dallas and Golden State back to back. And then lost 3 home games against Charlotte, Phoenix, and Utah. So now that is a fan team. That is a fan base that has room to complain and be frustrated. But anyway, they've been playing bad. We obviously just beat them a couple weeks ago in a game, which I just thought they came out flat. But here we are. It's a second game of a back-to-back. Anthony Davis and the rest of the guys put up big minutes, and Tyreek might be out. So, no, I'm not going to, chalk up a win necessarily.
So who are you most worried about on this Brooklyn Nets team?
I would have to say, just because of the fact that, he has energy and, it's 2 people. It's Jared Jack and Thaddeus Young. Thaddeus Young because he brings energy, and Jared Jack because, as we keep saying, These little point guards with their in-between games absolutely kill us, and Jack could get red hot from mid-range.
Yeah, I'm going with Thaddeus Young, too. And it was just a part of it's just like a hangover from the last game. Like he was generally unstoppable posting up at any wing position player that we put against him. Like he played some power forward in that game. He played most of his time against a small forward, and every time he was in as a small forward, they would use him to post up Luke Babbitt and Tyreek Evans and Dante Cunningham, and none of those three guys really could stop him. He was pretty effective in that kind of situation, so I'm a little worried about him. But then we get a whole whopping like 4 days with no games, and then we play the Denver Nuggets.
Mm.
And I hate the Nuggets. I just hate them.
And they fired their coach, so now they're playing decent again. They've got that little burst.
But it doesn't even matter. Like it just seems like the Nuggets always somehow find a way to beat the Pelicans, and I think because so much of their offense is predicated on pick and roll and wing players just playing scatter chaos offense where they catch the thing, they make a couple pump fakes, a jab left, a jab right, then they drive, and our wing guys aren't very good at stopping drives, and they score.
I mean, you point to the offense, but the last two games, I mean, the last game at New Orleans, we put up 85 against them, and then we go to Denver, and we had like 30 in the first half against them. So, excuse me, 37. So, to me, it's just, I don't understand why we can't score, and they're not doing anything. It just, there's some weird mojo where we just miss open shots against them. I mean, that was what happened in the last two games, is a ton of open, uncontested shots missed by the Pelicans, and I don't know, unless Denver has figured out a way to make people miss open shots, I don't know how much credit I could give them for that.
I don't know. They just seem to find a way to make our lives miserable. Yeah. And it's probably a hangover from the game that shall not be named. I just hate Denver.
Yeah.
They're real cool. Like, them and Portland. God, I don't know which one I hate more.
Yeah, I mean, they had a couple of wins right after they fired their coach, crushed the Knicks the other night. They're going to have two tough games before they play us, but yeah, I think this is a big, if you remember at the All-Star break, I said the Pels, these first 14 games were easy, the last 15 were a nightmare, so the Pels would have to go at least 11-3, they're sitting at 8-3 right now, they got three very winnable games, so yeah, I mean, I think these are ones that they've got to take advantage of, and honestly, the only one that kind of scares me is this at Brooklyn game, just because it's the second of a back-to-back, and I have no clue what's going on with Tyreek.
Yeah. Well, I'll also say this, too. Like, you say that, like, the last 15 games are scary, but they don't actually feel as scary as they did when I first looked at them at the beginning of the season. Like, there's an at Phoenix and versus Sacramento, versus Minnesota, at Los Angeles Lakers, at Sacramento, versus Phoenix, at Minnesota. None of those games, that's like half the games, and they're all winnable. And I will point out a lot of them happen to be on the second night of a back-to-back, so they're a little bit worse. Like March 20th, there's a game at Golden State after playing Phoenix the night before.
Oh,
what are our chances of winning that game? Like, should we just sit Anthony Davis now?
And then go ahead and look at the next game.
at Los Angeles?
So that stretch again.
The Clippers, by the way.
Three games in four nights at Phoenix, at Golden State, at Clippers. Like, you would take 1-2 and run to the bank right now, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'd be excited with
You'd be thrilled with 1-2. Yeah, I mean, Yeah, in that stretch, we get the Lakers or whatever, but, Minnesota's playing a lot better. There's just tough games in there, and, yeah, we can find ways to win them, but then jump on over and look at Oklahoma City's schedule. Like, I mean, right now they're in a stretch where they have 8 of 9 at home, And then they have a small, little, tiny, kind of hard part of their schedule. But Durant will be back by then. I mean, I don't know how many times I could say this. When I say I don't think the Pelicans will make the playoffs, it has little or nothing to do with the Pelicans. I think that they will have one of the 4 to 5 best records in the Western Conference post All-Star break. Like, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if the top 3 teams in the Western Conference record-wise are Golden State, Oklahoma City, and New Orleans. So it has nothing to do with New Orleans. I think they will be one of the top teams in the West to finish the year. It's just unfortunate that Oklahoma City will be one of the other ones.
Yeah.
So,
one last question for you.
Well, hold on. While you have, sure. Assuming you have the schedule up, why don't you jump over to Dallas's schedule right now, real quick?
Okay.
So, my theory is that best case scenario, the Pelicans could win 48 games. So they finish the season at 48 and 34, which means they go 13-5. Dallas does have the tiebreaker over us. So Dallas, it sounds crazy, Dallas would have to go 6-11 for us to make the playoffs in that scenario. So it sounds like there's no way Dallas could go 6-11. Look at that schedule. Is there a chance Dallas could go 6-11?
Wow. It's a very small chance, but yeah.
Yeah, there's a chance.
So they have games against Cleveland, the Clippers, OKC, Memphis, San Antonio, at Indiana, and Indiana's playing well and should have Paul George back by then. At OKC, versus Houston, versus Golden State, versus Phoenix, and then versus Portland.
Well, don't skip at Utah on a...
And at Utah. So there are 12 losable games in there, but they're a good enough team that they should be able to win, like, at least a third of them, right?
I mean, that Utah game is the third night on the road, or third game on the road in 4 nights. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, losable games, I got Cleveland, L.A., Oklahoma City, Memphis, Phoenix, San Antonio, Indiana, Oklahoma City, Houston, Golden State, Phoenix, at Utah, and Portland. I got way more than that, you know.
Yeah, but I just don't think they're going to lose everything. Like,
oh, no, even no. Half. They're not going to, but, I mean, they could also lose to Orlando, which is a game I'm not counting. I'm just...
Right.
I guess I just wonder, I mean, what would you bet on? Would you think there's a better chance of Dallas going 6-11 or Oklahoma City losing 6 or 7 games the rest of the way?
Hmm.
I don't know.
When does Durant come back?
I mean, it seems by all accounts he's going to come back on this homestand. I mean, I guess... Pretty much what it seems like is the most likely date is Friday against Minnesota, so he misses one more game. And then as you see, the schedule is kind of friendly. If, you know, they get Chicago without Rose and Butler. Their schedule doesn't really get hard until...
Yeah, I only see like 9 likely losses on their schedule. Possible. Or not likely, but good chance of losses on them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Dallas is just a little too far ahead.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I'm just trying to say if the Pelicans are going to end up with, you know, with 47, 48 wins, I don't know what's more likely, you know, that Oklahoma City loses the games they have to lose or Dallas just hits a stretch where, you know, they start losing, maybe a Tyson Chandler type goes down or whatever, Rondo keeps hurting their offense, so I don't know, it's just something else to watch for. I think the hopes of catching San Antonio are obviously gone, but if you want to look for a dark horse team that the Pelicans might be able to catch, it would be Dallas. And the other thing, lastly, I want to bring up with that whole playoff chase is, to me, it's looking more and more like if the Pelicans make the playoffs, they will keep their first-round pick.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a double bonus.
Yeah. Explain that to people, because that seems really weird. Like, why are they keeping their first round pick if they make the playoffs, but if they don't make the playoffs, they lose it?
Yeah. So Houston thinks they're so clever with the way that they structure. I mean, they've done this a couple times now where they structure the picks they get in a trade. But basically, Houston, you know, wanted to guarantee themselves a decent pick. So New Orleans keeps the pick if it's 1 through 3 or if it's 20 through 30. So, you know, obviously if we finish out of the playoffs, likely we'll give Houston the 14th pick. But if we make the playoffs, it looks like New Orleans would be around pick 20 or 21, the way that everybody else in the East is playing. I mean, as of right now, this second, the Pelicans are a game behind fifth in the East. And, you know, Toronto and Chicago keep falling. So if you assume that the Pelicans are going to need 48 wins to make the playoffs, I don't think both Toronto and Chicago get to 48 wins. And if that's the case, the Pelicans would finish with like the 20th pick in the draft, and they would keep it based on the protections of the pick. So, you know, I think 48 is probably the magic number. The Pelicans get there, and you're looking at a good chance they not only make the playoffs, but keep their pick. So you're looking at, you know, wanting to go 13-5 from here on out. And, you know, those last 15 games are brutal, so you really want to go 3-0 over these next three games.
Yep. So that was your whole thing about who could they catch. I want to see if you think this is fair. The Hollinger playoff odds tool on ESPN gives the New Orleans Pelicans a 13.6% chance of making the playoffs. Fair or not fair?
I think it's, I mean, to go 13-5, not knowing, we could have three of our top four players that we don't know with Tyreek Evans. This could be a two-week injury, in which case I would say it's 2% chance. So, yeah, I think that's very fair.
Okay. Yeah, I looked at that too, and I'm like, yeah, I gotta say that's about right.
Yeah. Now, Kevin Durant suffers a setback, and he's done for the season. I'd put that way up, but I'm assuming he comes back, and they have a little bit of trouble adjusting in the first game or two, but they get through it, and then they just become a whole different level of a team, you know, with him back. I mean, he is replacing Kyle Singler. Right. You are going from Kyle Singler to Kevin Durant. I don't care if there's a little bit of chemistry issues. That team is going to get way better.
Yep. All right, so got anything else to talk about?
No, that's about it. Got a, you know, those couple games coming up. It'll be interesting. Hope for the best for Tyreek. Hopefully by the time you guys are listening to this, they'll already be good news. And another great win for the Pels. I'm going 2-0. I want you to predict 0-2 just so we go undefeated, but I'll give you a chance. What's your prediction for these two games?
1-1.
Ugh. Even if we go opposite, we're the... Come on, Ryan. All right.
I'm hedging my bets. Maybe I could be right for once, man. So thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know, and we'll be back next week.